Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Tata Steel Limited conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Samita Shah. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thank you. Good evening, good afternoon, and good morning to all of you joining us from India and other parts of the world. On behalf of Tata Steel, welcome and thank you for joining us on the call today to discuss our results for the second quarter of FY21. I hope all of you and your families are safe and in good health. I would also like to wish our Indian participants a very happy Diwali and a prosperous New Year. Today's call is being led by Mr. C.D. Narendran, CEO and Managing Director, Tata Steel, and Mr. Kaushik Chatterjee, Executive Director and CFO, Tata Steel. As we have been doing the last several quarters, in addition to Tata Steel, we will also comment on the performance of Tata Steel BHL and Tata Steel Long Products, and of course, take your questions on any of them. The call is also open to our retail shareholders, so if you have dialed in, please type in your questions and we will try and answer as many questions as we can. Before we start, I would like to mention that the entire discussion today will be covered by the Safe Harbor Clause on page 2 of the presentation, which is uploaded on our website. Thank you, and over to you, Naren.
Thanks, Samita. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, and happy Diwali to those of you celebrating Diwali. So I start, as you know, the economic activity has been improving across geographies with the relaxation and restrictions. The pace of recovery has varied and the risk of further outbreaks persists. Europe is currently experiencing a second wave with several countries going into lockdown again, and we are running our operations safely and efficiently to service our customers, and the health and safety of our employees and the communities in which we operate continues to remain our foremost priority. Chinese domestic steel demand continues to be quite strong, which has supported international steel prices and kept iron ore prices at elevated levels. While demand and production is still below pre-COVID levels in the rest of the world, it has slowly been recovering. This has led to improved spot steel spreads across key regions. In India, the steel demand recovered with resumption of economic activities and in anticipation of festive demand. While the steel demand declined by 10.1% year-on-year basis to 23.6 million tons in the second quarter, apparent steel consumption in August and September recovered to about 96% of FY20 monthly average. In this environment, we ramped up our steel making and downstream operations across Tata Steel standalone, Tata Steel Long Products, Tata Steel BSL back to pre-COVID levels. Our crude steel production rose by 54% on quarter-on-quarter basis and 2% on year-on-year basis to 4.59 million tons in India. We liquidated the inventory buildup in Q1 to achieve our highest ever deliveries of 5.05 million tons, which is a growth of 72% on quarter-on-quarter and 22% on year-on-year basis. I would like to mention that our domestic sales in the second quarter was 3.86 million tons, a market-leading increase of about 11% on year-on-year basis. This growth was broad-based with growth not just on quarter-on-quarter basis, but on year-on-year basis across all key business verticals of automotive, branded products, retail, and IPPE, which is industrial products and products. The product mix was also richer on quarter-on-quarter basis as all verticals focused on higher value-added products. Our downstream portfolio of tubes, wires, etc. has done extremely well with a year-on-year increase in volumes. We reduced our exports significantly from about 50% of total sales in Q1 to about 24% of total sales in Q2, and this will further reduce over this quarter and next quarter. In Europe, recovery has been more gradual. Overall demand, particularly automotive, has been weak, while the share of steel imports has remained elevated. Imposition of country-specific import quotas with the quarterly administration has been a key positive for the EU steel industry, and spot hot rolled coil gross spread improved from August 20 from earlier unsustainable lows. We've been able to improve our sales mix in the second quarter and increase our deliveries by 15% on quarter-on-quarter basis to 2.27 million tons. This, coupled with the recovering spot steel spreads, helped us reduce the EBITDA loss during the quarter, though the full impact of recovery in spreads is yet to be captured due to the lag effect. We have initiated discussions with SSAB Sweden based on the interest received for the potential acquisition of Tata Steel Netherlands business. The company has also commenced discussions with the Supervisory Board of Tata Steel Netherlands and the Board of Management of Tata Steel Netherlands, and the process will move to the next stage including due diligence and stakeholder consultations. There is limited overlap between products and geographies, between SSAB and TSN from an antitrust perspective, and this will make the transaction easier. Coming to Tata Steel UK, we will continue to own and operate it. We intend to separate Tata Steel Netherlands and Tata Steel UK and pursue separate strategic paths for them going forward. We are also undertaking a series of steps to make the business self-sufficient in the UK, and we continue our dialogue with the UK government on potential measures to safeguard the long-term future of Tata Steel UK. We are now reorganizing our Indian subsidiaries into four verticals, as we've mentioned before, to drive scale, synergies, and simplification, which will create value for our stakeholders. This will also give you a better understanding of the strength of our portfolio and the resilience of our business model. As a part of this today, the boards of Tata Steel Long Products, Tata Metallics, and Indian Steel and Bio Products approve the merger of Tata Metallics and Indian Steel Bio Products into Tata Steel Long Products, and we expect to achieve a significant progress over the next 6 to 9 months. I will now hand it over to Kaushik to comment on our financial performance.
Thank you, Naren. Good evening, good morning, and good afternoon to all of you. Hope you are all well and safe, and happy Diwali in advance. Let me start by commenting on our financial performance. Despite all the challenges, Tata Steel has delivered a strong set of financial results. Our consolidated revenue for the quarter stood at about 37,154 crores, which was higher by about 53% on a quarter-on-quarter basis, largely due to higher deliveries, improved product mix across entities, and buoyant prices. I would like to remind you that these numbers do not include our Southeast Asian operations, as they continue to be classified as held for sale. Our consolidated EBITDA grew to rupees 6,217 crores with strong underlying performance in India. Our India operations, which includes Tata Steel standalone, Tata Steel BSL, Tata Steel Long Products, generated revenues of 23,067 crores and an EBITDA of 6,025 crores as deliveries exceeded 5 million tons and product mix also changed favorably. Tata Steel standalone revenues improved to rupees 16,362 crores, which is higher by 75% on a quarter-on-quarter basis and about 10% on a year-on-year basis. EBITDA was rupees 4,718 crores, which translates to an EBITDA margin of 29% and an EBITDA per ton of rupees 13,127. Fixed cost reduction, raw material cost optimization, and other operational efficiency improvements generated a cost savings of about 938 crores during the first half of this financial year. Our key subsidiaries, Tata Steel Bhushan, or TSBSL, Tata Steel Long Products, have also delivered very strong operating performance. TSBSL generated an EBITDA of 1,113 crores, which translates into an EBITDA per ton of rupees 8,735, while Tata Steel Long Products generated an EBITDA of rupees 194 crores, which translates into an EBITDA per ton of 10,512. Both entities generated free cash flows of more than 1,450 crores and 230 crores respectively. Our other Indian subsidiaries such as Tata Metallics, Tinplate and other downstream subsidiaries also reported strong results with combined EBITDA increasing to 258 crores in the second quarter of FY21. Moving to Europe, our revenues increased to £1.4 billion in the second quarter. EBITDA loss reduced to 48 million in this quarter from 67 million in the previous quarter, primarily with improvements in revenue, lower raw material costs, and cost takeout efficiencies. Wage support from the European and the UK government was about 45 million. We have made provision for about 50 million of carbon emission rights in this quarter compared to a net gain of 78 million in the previous quarter. We continue to pivot our business decisions on cash while aggressively managing costs, spends, and working capital. We have also been very disciplined on CapEx, spending about rupees 1,383 crores on CapEx in the second quarter on a consolidated basis. This is primarily on safety, environment, sustenance, and critical maintenance. Strong operating cash flows combined with aggressive liquidity management and disciplined CapEx spend has helped us to generate free cash flow of more than 7,800 crores during this quarter and 8,500 crores during the first half of this current financial year. During the last call, we had committed to deleverage about 1 billion annually. I'm glad to report that despite the effect of the pandemic, we have successfully reduced our consolidated gross debt by about 4,550 crores and the net debt by 8,197 crores this quarter. This includes about 3,366 crores of net debt reduction at the standalone level, about 1,398 crores at the Tata Steel BSL level. TSLP net debt has also reduced by about 244 crores during this quarter. The net debt is now much below the March 2019 level. As of September 30th, 2020, our liquidity buffer improved to 24,323 crores, which included 17,824 crores of cash and cash equivalent. We will be reducing gross debt further in the second half as business conditions normalize. On Tata Steel Netherlands, we are engaged in consultation with the stakeholders, and as Naren mentioned, and the due diligence by SSAB will also commence. We expect to continue this in the second half of this year, and subject to regulatory approvals, we hope to close the transaction in the next 6 to 9 months. Proceeds of this transaction will be used to deleverage further over and above our annual target of 1 billion. We are also committed to finding a structural solutions to Tata Steel UK. And as Naren mentioned, it is primary for us to make it self-sustainable and not dependent on cash infusion from India. With this, I will end it here and open the floor for questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Amit Dixit from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question and congratulations for a good set of numbers. I have two questions. The first one is on Tata Steel Europe's performance. So you mentioned that there is a carbon emission provision of around 58 million. And despite that, the performance is much better QOQ and even compared to European peers. So had this provision not been there, I mean, the EBITDA would have been much better. So just wanted to understand the key drivers of this performance. I mean, because as I understand, cost remains the same. In fact, prices, headline price also remain the same, but still EBITDA has improved considerably. That is my first question. And second question is it possible at this stage to split EBITDA and liabilities between Netherlands and UK divisions?
Yeah, I'll respond to the first one, and then Kaushik, if you can respond to the second one. I think, the European operating performance has been stable over the last two, three quarters. The spreads have basically not been so great, and that's why the financial performance has not reflected the stability in the operations that we've seen over the last two, three quarters. Second point is, of course, we have also received some support from the government, which is there, but that doesn't fully explain. That's not the reason why the quarter-on-quarter performance is improved. I think overall, there has been a fair amount of focus on cost. There have been cost takeouts. The spreads have improved a bit. The mix has also improved a bit, because the auto companies have also come back. They were not fully active in the first quarter. They are now more active in the second quarter. And Europe has responded quite well to the stimulus because the EU has responded much faster than they did in 2008. So there are multiple reasons where the benefit is felt. We've also had, coal prices are stable and the spreads have improved a bit Q2 over Q1.
Yeah, just to supplement what Naren mentioned, the EBITDA of September, the underlying EBITDA was actually positive. So your point is valid that if we did not have the provisioning, we would have been in a better position. Even if you gross back the impact of the employment benefits that the governments have given. I don't know what you meant by EBITDA and liability. I understand the EBITDA, which is typically, if I look at the way the EBITDA moves in Europe and in Netherlands and UK, it's about two-thirds, one-third in stable times. But I don't know what period you wanted because these are negative and I don't have it readily. And liability, as far as the debt liability is concerned, it is the SFA, which is the long-term debt, is actually at the PSE level. And the two companies or the few businesses have managed their working capital basis. Maybe after some time, maybe in the course of the next few quarters, as the progress on the transaction becomes clearer, we will be in a better position to do the separation and disclose.
Okay, great. Can I ask a follow-up or should I come back in the queue?
Best is if you come back in the queue.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nakeem Parekh from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much, sir. Sir, two questions. My first question is, the net debt reduction in the first half has been very impressive. Now, the second quarter was a blowout quarter, but the full benefit of higher prices should follow in the second half of the year. So in that context, can we expect a material net debt reduction in the second half of the year as well? Maybe not as much as $1 billion, but can we see a large net reduction? My second question is broadly on this proposed sale of the Netherlands units. First of all, what happens to the UK unit? Because that is where the big cash drain is. And secondly, if we look at the Tata Europe financials, which are filed in the UK and, you know, which has the subsidiaries and all those entities, it effectively suggests that the Netherlands units has an average EBITDA of roughly $500 to $550 million between F15 and F19, normalized years. Would that, and which effectively implies a $70 to $80 per ton margin. Not in these times, but are those assumptions correct? Or is Netherlands a much higher or lower profitable business than those $70 to $80 per ton?
So, if I can answer in sequentially, the first one, as far as the debt reduction, I think there will be this reduction, but more towards the gross debt reduction. We will be using the cash flows as well as the current liquidity, and certainly you can see the gross debt reduction to be more on the second half, and we will follow it up in the next year also. As far as your question on what happens to UK, I think Narin did answer that we will own and operate currently. We have a task ahead in that, in terms of making it self-sustaining and ensuring that we don't have to support it financially from India. And therefore, you will hear about our plans going forward in the next few weeks and months, because that's an ongoing work in progress. Also, it will be finalized as we separate the two companies between Netherlands and UK. There will be opportunities for cost takeouts and opportunities for running it differently, and we are looking at all of that. As far as Netherlands is concerned, your numbers are ballpark right on a normalized basis. There have been times where Netherlands has been in the zone of $60 to $70 per ton. But those are times when you have a stable spread of beyond 225 to 230 euros per ton in Europe, more likely 240 to 250. That's the level at which Netherlands makes that kind of a spread, if that answers your question. I don't know, Narin, if you want to answer.
I think just to add more on the first point that you made, yes, this quarter we've also gained from the extra inventory that we carried into this quarter. So there was a cash release because of the inventory reduction during Q2. That level of inventory reduction is not possible in subsequent quarters. But having said that, the pricing and the market conditions are better, will be better in Q3 and Q4 as compared to even Q2, which got better as the quarter went along.
Understood. So just to clarify, is there any outer timeline for this Netherlands transaction? Will it drag on for the way the proposed transaction with Thyssen moved on, or is it something that can get over in the next 2 to 3 quarters?
I think Kaushik has said. Yeah, go ahead, Kaushik. Yeah.
No, Pinakin, I think I've said that we have just initiated conversations, so there will be stages in these transactions, but we are certainly looking at a tighter timeline if it all goes well, and that's what we are focused on. I would imagine that SSAB is also very keen to work as speedily as us, and therefore it is, I don't think we can give timelines, but our interest is focused around the next 6 to 9 months.
I think the big difference between both the transactions is that we are not expecting Competition Commission issues simply because the overlap areas in the Thyssen transaction was packaging and auto, and those are not concerns at all with SSAB. They're not in packaging, and between us, the auto footprint is not so significant. I mean, so that took a lot of time last time. We don't expect that to be the one which drags the timeline.
Understood. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we'd like to inform participants that in order that the management is able to address questions from all participants in the conference, please limit your questions to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, we request you to rejoin the queue. The next question is from the line of Anuj Singla from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good evening, everyone. So first question is regarding the net debt and the CapEx. Our net debt reduction has been much faster than what we would have anticipated at the beginning of the year. And consequently, when can we expect the Kalinganagar phase two CapEx restarting? Is there a formal guidance you can give us on CapEx maybe for the next year and the timeline there?
Yeah. So on Kalinganagar, as we said, even before the year started, we were focusing on the pellet plant and the cold rolling mill, and that remains our focus even when we ease the purse strings a bit on the CapEx. And we will follow up with growth after we've come closer to completing the cold rolling mill and the pellet plant work. So I think we hope that at the end of this quarter, we will be in a better position to comment on this. And we had already done a fair amount of work in both these areas, so we should be able to accelerate fast once we decide to move ahead.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. And the second question is with regards to the European operations. So the Netherlands plant, the IJmuiden plant, which is up for sale, it's regarded as one of the best, most efficiently run plants in Europe, wood-based and best in terms of profitability. And the U.K. plant is exactly the opposite of that. So it's good to see that we are reducing our European footprint, but when I look at the portfolio, the asset which is right under stress, that is actually we don't have a visibility on that. So if Netherlands goes out of the portfolio, don't you think finding a solution for U.K. will become even more difficult? Like our deal with TK included both the plants, but at this point of time, it's only Netherlands. So do you think it becomes more difficult to find a sustainable solution for U.K.?
So firstly, in U.K., also a lot of work has been done over the years to shrink the problem in some sense, both physically and financially. Okay? So the U.K. business is now a 3 million ton business, and which was significantly negative EBITDA, actually was break-even and positive EBITDA till the last year or so, the pandemic and the economic slowdown hit us. So I think we are in a much better place in U.K. than we were maybe 3-4 years back. That is one. Secondly, there is a discussion going on with the government, which is looking at multiple options to see what is it that the government can do to help us. Of course, we've had some help which has been available to pretty much everyone in the industry there because of the initiatives of the pandemic from the government. The third thing is we are also waiting to see what happens post-Brexit. what is the impact on the economic activity in the UK? What are the steps the government is taking to revive economic activity in the UK and how that can help us? So there are multiple things which can happen. So I think we are focused now on making UK self-sufficient, cash neutral, not dependent on cash from India. And I think we are comfortable that we should be able to get there, you know, sooner than later. And in the meanwhile, we will look at all possible options.
So if I just may add to what Naren mentioned, that the one is that the size of the portfolio, as far as UK is concerned, gets much smaller. Second, it is in this world, having a combined solution is perhaps more difficult. And in effect, this will provide us with more strategic flexibility and look at all options as to how to make it sustainable.
Okay, understood. Lastly, if I may, can you talk about what kind of price increases we can anticipate in 3Q on a blended basis for Tata Steel India and on the coking coal side as well, if you can give some kind of that with it. Thank you.
Yeah, so I think if I look at this quarter, I mean, Q3 versus Q2, we are expecting about 4,000 to 5,000 rupees increase. I think Q2 to Q1 was about 3,500. Q2 to Q1 was more because of the mix. We exported less, and it was not so much of domestic price increase because most of those price increases came in August and September and didn't play out. And hence, most of the increase in Q3 is basically on the price increases that we've got. So that's the NR guidance that I can give you. Prices, of course, we've increased prices in this month as well, but we are certainly seeing that we are, now the rate of price increases over the next few months will be different from the last few months. But it is also a function of international prices, which, as you know, in the last 10 days has been quite strong in Asia. So let's see what happens in China, because even today prices at $540 are nowhere near all-time highs or $600, which used to be the average price till maybe 3-4 years back. So I think there's still some headroom for the international prices to go up. Iron ore is still quite strong. In terms of coking coal, I think we're looking at $5 to $10 from a consumption point of view reduction. And let's see what happens in Q4 because coking coal prices, as you know, have been a bit soft given what's happening between China and Australia.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we request participants to please limit your questions to two per participant. The next question is from Sumangal Nevatia from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Good evening and thanks for the opportunity. The first question is on the Europe. Is it possible to share what is the cash burn in 1H? And since both the Netherlands divestment and some talks with the government might take another couple of quarters, what is the output of this cash burn and profitability over the next couple of 1 to 2 quarters in Europe?
So in the first, I must say that in the first half of this year, we have not supported Tata Steel Europe on any funding from India. And this is something that is, as Naren mentioned, and I emphasize that this is actually the fundamental part of the business. We have looked at working capital, we've looked at cost takeouts, and ensuring that the capex numbers are also controlled and focused only on what is essential. So in the first half of this year, Tata Steel has not supported by putting in any equity or any sub debt or any investments. They have managed the working capital effectively. Obviously, with the price increasing and the market looking better, we expect that this should continue. And end of the year, the full year basis, we will see as to what is the total burn that is there. But effectively, it would not be more than a couple of hundred million.
Understood. So next question is with respect to the merger of subsidiaries which we have announced. We are a bit surprised with that because the understanding was that the natural next step would be something similar to Bhushan, where we'll be looking to merge these individual subsidiaries into Tata Steel. So if you could some color what is the thought process there, and I mean, what sort of synergies will some a ductile iron pipe business and Tata Steel long one would have?
So as you said earlier, basically we are looking at grouping our subsidiaries into four clusters, right? So we said long products, downstream flat products, utilities and infrastructure, and mining. So metallics, you know, could go either way, but the advantage of metallics going into long products is the upstream is very similar. They operate similar size blast furnaces, whether it's in Usha Martin or what was the Usha Martin steel business or the Kharagpur unit of Tata Metallics. That is one. So there is a lot of value in the upstream in terms of cost synergies and best practices and things like that, because Tata Steel operates much bigger blast furnaces, and it's a different ballgame altogether. Secondly, from a value chain point of view, both are basically adding value to metallics, you know. So one is DRI going into long products, and the other is foundry grade pig iron going into ductile iron pipe, you know. So there is a little bit of value chain kind of similarity. The products are different, of course. I mean, of course, it's also a matter of definition. In Europe, pipes are also called long products. So it's a, but that's not the driver. I think fundamentally we saw cost synergies, we saw operating synergies as big drivers of metallics fitting into the TSLP kind of cluster. And ISWP is basically downstream long products. So it is basically doing wires and wire rods, and which is straight fit into the long products portfolio.
Understood. Just a, so in the long term, can we expect say even Tata Steel long product to come into Tata Steel, because Tata Steel is also not purely flat, and Jamshedpur would be still some overlap there as well. So not something in the near term or medium term, but in the long term, will that be the natural next step?
So we are thinking of the long products business slightly differently. Because Tata Steel, primarily the big blast furnaces are more suited for a good scalable flat products business. So if you look at Kalinganagar and Angul, it is primarily flat products. Jamshedpur, for historical reasons, has a bit of long products in it. But all the growth in long products, we believe, will come more through Tata Steel long products. We are also moving what is called the steel recycling business, which we started with the first plant in Rohtak, into this entity in some sense, because we also believe that going forward there is an opportunity to grow the recycling business, to use the EAF route in parts of the country which don't have iron ore, but where there is scrap, to develop a EAF kind of long products business, which is more carbon efficient and more cost efficient because of the way it is done. And we also have an asset-light model where people can put up the facilities, whereas our value will come from the distribution and branding, which is where a big strength is for us for a you know, rebar business. So there are multiple models which are possible, and that's why we wanted to keep the long products business a bit separate, because there are different operating models we can you know, build for the long products business, not limited to the classical blast furnace, big steel mill shop, big rolling mill, which is typical of flat products businesses.
Understood. Thanks and all the best, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rakhi Jhunjhunwala from Rare Enterprises. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good evening, sir. Congrats on a fine performance.
Good evening.
What I wanted to understand is, you said steel prices this quarter should be 4,000 to 5,000 rupees higher than the last quarter on average. Your realization.
Realization, yes. Steel prices would be different, but I'm saying realizations, because partly it's steel prices, partly it's mixed.
Right. So one thing I want to know, what is the capacity in Netherlands and what is the capacity in England?
7 million in Netherlands and 3 million in England. 3.2 in England, 6.8, 6.9 in Netherlands.
And Netherlands is profitable?
Traditionally, yes, Netherlands has been more profitable, because Netherlands configuration-wise is also better equipped. It has a pellet plant, it is on the coast, and it obviously runs a very efficient operation.
And the debt in both companies, they are debt-free except the working capital. Hello?
Kaushik, you want to comment on that?
So debt, there is no debt in individual companies which is there in the consolidated, and working capital debt is there in terms of securitization.
So therefore there is not much debt in the Netherlands company which we propose to sell. Am I right?
Not on the company, but on a consolidated European debt is about 1.7 billion euros.
Oh, right. And what is the, have we finalized the broad commercial terms with them? And they're going to see there is a process of a transaction which is expression of interest or, finalization of not exact but broad commercial terms. And then the due diligence, and then finalization of terms, and then regulatory approval. Where are we at that stage today?
That's correct. So we are at the stage where we've got the interest. We are going to get into a due diligence after, today. And then the discussion in Europe, especially in mainland Europe, there is a consultation process, which is something we don't see in Anglo-Saxon world. So there is a consultation with unions, etc., and with the stakeholders, the supervisory board and the board of management. And then the finalization of the terms and then...
But Mr. Kaushik, are you allowing somebody a due diligence without agreeing on broad commercial terms? Because if you want X,
no, so that's
what X minus X high, then what does due diligence mean? Without agreeing to some broad idea. I don't mean the exact term, but plus minus 5-10%, there should be some agreement on the broad commercial terms.
So that is in place in the sense that when the offer came in terms of expression of interest, that they have indicated that this is the broader commercial valuation, etc., that we will do, which is something which is obviously non-binding, and that's why it's important for us to for them to go through the due diligence process and confirm, and that's when it becomes more definitive and certain.
So as I understand it, there is a basic understanding of the commercial term. They may vary by a certain percentage after the due diligence and the consultation. Am I right?
That's correct. That's correct.
So that means the most important part of the transaction is the price and the proper due diligence and regulatory approval. So it can be done fast, I think. And are they proposing to keep all the labor and, are they proposing to keep all the labor and, otherwise then there is no problem in the consultation. See, the main problem is the demand of the labor.
Yes.
If the labor is retained, that... Hello?
Yes. So they are principally a company where they work. They are principally a company that they work with the management of the company. So they don't have big plans of redundancies or something. That's not on their drawing board, at least.
Right.
But they will have to do the due diligence to get a good sense.
I think what is important is the consultation process is a legal requirement, and the unions and others who we have to consult are allowed a certain number of days. So it is for them to decide whether they want to take, if it's 45 days, or whether they can agree to the terms or whatever sooner. So that's why they will have a say. If they may agree sooner, that's good.
There is another process, which is the separation of the two companies. Today we run the company as almost like one company. So there is a separation process, which is only time dependent. So that is the only part. And that's why we are saying that we want to do it in a much faster manner. But these hoops have to be, the process has to be followed, and we need to take everybody along in doing this.
Yeah, my impression is right. My impression is commercial terms understandings, and I don't think there's a problem in due diligence. Problem are the trade unions and the competition commission. If you are assured the trade union won't object, and the competition commission we'll do it fast, then I think the transition can be done fast. Hello?
You're right.
Fair enough. Yeah, this is not going to, hopefully this is not going to be the last, like the German transaction. Hello?
You don't expect that in this time. Yeah, we don't expect that.
And another thing I feel is, what stops us from just closing the British operations? And mothballing it. I mean, what is it? We keep losing money and we don't want to stop it. Why? Because we have love with the labor there. No, I want to ask this question.
There is also cost of closure.
Pardon?
There is also a cost of closure.
So, in kind of one-time closure, and forget about it. Instead of dying every day, die once here.
But I think, the past is past. We are closer and closer. As Kaushik said, even in the last 6 months, they've operated without any support. And these have been very difficult 6 months. So I think we are coming closer and closer to a point where the business can be self-sustaining. And then, of course, we can decide whatever we want to do. So at least it won't be a drain on cash on India. And then we
right.
can see what else we can do there.
Oh, that's the best news. If it's not a drain, then we continue for 10 years. What does it matter? And I'm hopeful. No, no, the way the company is being done so efficiently, we will be. And if there's not a drain, we get time then. No? We get time, we can take out 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, what does it matter to us?
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. Pardon?
Thank you. Thank you.
And thank you on a sensory. Congrats on a superlative performance. Hello, I have one last question, Mr. Narendran. If you decide now that we will continue with the Kolkata expansion, When can we complete it?
So the pellet plant and cold rolling mill can be completed within 12 to 15 months of giving them the go ahead to go full steam. The blast furnace may take about 24 months to 36 months simply because we had put that a little bit behind in priority because we said the focus is on value and cost rather than volume. And also I want to say that, you know, one thing which we should keep in mind is this year we've already lost 2 million tons of production in the first quarter. So that is available for us next year. So it's not as if Tata Steel, even if Kalinganagar is not there, can't see growth. Second point I want to make is that, you know, this year we would have exported more than 3 million tons. Most of it has gone in the first 4 months of the year, right? So to me, that is also an optionality available to us next year that you don't need to export so much. So if the domestic market picks up well, we have an opportunity to tap into what we've exported, the volumes that we exported, plus the volumes that we've lost. So that also gives us time to get some incremental volume and a better mix in the domestic market if the Indian market picks up fast. And if that is what is happening, then obviously we can accelerate on Kalinganagar without compromising on a focus on reducing the debt by at least $1 billion a year.
No, and what is the capacity you will have after this expansion in Kolkata?
24 million tons. We are at 19 now, 19.5 or so. That will go to 24 once we expand Kalinganagar.
And you are initiating expansion even in Tata Steel Bhushan?
Bhushan was operating at a 5 million ton level before the pandemic hit us. So once they reach 5.2, which is their capacity, we can look at expanding Bhushan from 5 to 8 or 5 to 10. I mean, the possibility is there. But we will focus first on Kalinganagar and that possibility is there because Bhushan is, basically the land in Bhushan is similar to the land in Jamshedpur. It's about 1800 acres. So that's why between Bhushan and Kalinganagar, we have enough space to expand depending on our appetite and the market.
So Kalinganagar also you can take to 10 and this also you can take to 10.
Kalinganagar can go up to 16 if we have the appetite.
Oh, we have all the infrastructure and everything. Hmm. Okay, thank you, sir.
It's about 3,500 acres of land. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Rakesh. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ritesh Shah from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, my first question is, in your initial remarks, you did indicate proceeds will be used to deliver the balance sheet, and you also said to make it self-sufficient and not make it dependent on India. Just wanted to understand, if this transaction goes through with SAP, will there be money which will come in at a Tata Steel UK or Tata Steel Europe level?
So the sale will happen at Tata Steel. So the first question is, you mentioned about deleveraging, and I think that's confirmation of the fact that any proceeds that comes in will be at Tata Steel Europe level, because Tata Steel Europe holds Tata Steel Netherlands holding, and that company holds Tata Steel Netherlands. So obviously that will come in Tata Steel Europe level, but effectively, it will be used for deleveraging the debt out there or here. We, that optimization we are working on, and we'll see.
That's quite encouraging. And sir, just to understand that, if I look at Saab Europe numbers, it's around 3.4, 3.5. Netherlands is more than twice. I think from profitability point of view, it's significantly better. It essentially means there will be a net cash infusion over there. Can you help me understand the numbers a bit better for, say, Netherlands? Last year's reported numbers on a clean EBITDA basis was $912 million, with UK's loss at $226. Can you help quantify how much was the Netherlands EBITDA and the net cash number right now?
Well, I don't have it readily, but Samita can give it to you. But broadly, as I said, that about 70 to 80% of the EBITDA of Tata Steel Europe has always been from Netherlands, at times when in a positive EBITDA zone, and in many cases, many times when UK has had a negative EBITDA, and yet you see a positive EBITDA in Tata Steel Europe, it's because of Tata Steel Netherlands. So I think that's how you should read it, but if specific numbers we don't publish, and we have not published in the past, but going forward, when the deal gets more certain, we are certainly going to disclose the numbers.
That's quite encouraging. And just two follow-up questions. One was on Tata Steel UK quotas, given the EU steel safeguard duties. What does this mean for UK operations, given these quotas are on quarterly basis? Correct me if I'm wrong. That's the first thing. And secondly, on Bhushan merger and tech synergies, I think this has been pending since quite some time. Those are the questions. Thank you.
I'll answer the first one, and then Kaushik will answer the second. So basically, the quotas, as we've seen it declared so far, is sufficient for us to sell from Tata Steel UK into the continent. So we are not expecting any big disruption at this point in time.
Well, the second one, there has been multiple hearings of NCLT in recent weeks, and we are looking for NCLT's advice and direction on the holding of the shareholders meeting, and post that we'll do the filing back into NCLT, and we're hopeful that over the next 6-7 months we should be able to find a closure to that, assuming that the NCLT clears the proposal. That's where we are.
Sure. Thank you so much for the answers, and happy Diwali.
Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, I'd like to hand the conference over to Ms. Samita Shah.
Yeah, we have a question from retail shareholders, and we've been compiling them. The question is regarding Tata Steel Long Products. Will we expand the capacity of Tata Steel Long Products, particularly the Usha market?
So currently we are, if you look year on year, of course, the volumes will grow, but we basically believe that this asset can easily operate at around 700,000-750,000. And then if we leverage the process route that we have of using the electric arc furnace more, which is a higher cost option and can be justified only when the prices are good, then potentially we can take it to even close to 1 million tons. So this is as far as the steel bake is concerned. Beyond that, will require investments and also land, because the Usha Martin steel business that we acquired doesn't have excess land. That's where the ISWP merger comes in handy, because ISWP has more land than it is using currently, and that allows opportunities for Tata Steel long progress. The other expansion is a little bit more slightly longer term, which is linked to the scrap business that we are developing. So that's a few more years away, but we believe that going forward, if there are inorganic growth opportunities for the long products business, here again the potential vehicle is Tata Steel long products.
Thank you.
Samita, are you there? You're on mute. Yeah.
Do we move to the next question?
Yeah, we'll hand it back to the participants. Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from Satyadeep Jain from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking the question. A couple of questions. One on the transaction as it compares with ThyssenKrupp. So SSAB is primarily in the Nordic region, not too close to Netherlands, which is opposite to the ThyssenKrupp's Duisburg facility, which is not too far from Netherlands. So the motivation for SSAB and the kind of synergies would be lower than what ThyssenKrupp and Tata Steel were looking at, is what I would believe. The motivation, do you think, would primarily be to enter a new geography, maybe get some pricing power in certain products, or purely overhead reduction? And related to that would be, how would you look at the product mix of Tata Steel Netherlands and SSAB Europe? Is the first question.
So,
go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Kaushik. You go ahead.
So, yes, geographically it may not be in the same contiguous landmass, but it is not too far away from Imaudin. Secondly, I think you have to look at it from a broader market perspective, because there are no overlaps. This is actually, in case of the Thyssen JV, we were looking at consolidation in a different form because of capacity overlaps. But in this case, it is actually an expansion of the market is what we can see from their logic. And they're looking at expanding market, expanding portfolio, expanding what the product mix and the capacity capability that Tata Steel Netherlands has. So it is more a growth-oriented acquisition is what they're looking at, is what we understand. I think synergy discussion is best understood by them, because this is an acquisition, not a JV like a Thyssen. But strategic rationale, what we understand, is it's more expansion. There is also a consolidation story playing out in mainland Europe, as you can see from other press reports. And therefore, they are looking at it as an opportunity to actually partner with one of the best plants in Western Europe and expand the horizon and bring in their capability and have cross-functional synergies. So it's not built on overhead reduction principles, because this is very different given the overlaps are not there in the product mix.
And what kind of overlap would be there in certain products? Let's say auto, any comment on that? Is it minimal?
That's what Naren mentioned in the beginning, that very minimal automotive and no packaging. Netherlands has a large packaging presence, but SSAB doesn't. SSAB is big in plates and in Q&T products.
I think the good thing about this partnership or this acquisition will be that, you know, both are in high end, but in different segments. So you get fairly high end focused business. SSAB is a world leader in quenched and tempered plates, and also, so they are in all sorts of high end, less in auto. Netherlands is not so much in plates, it's more in auto and packaging. So in many ways, you have a good presence across multiple high-value segments.
Okay. And one more question, if I may. The On the strategic rationale, I think after the ThyssenKrupp deal, if I understand correctly, the transformation plan was set back for a while, and the management's focus was that after that deal was scuttled, they would be refocused on turning around the operations. Now, this deal came along. While the discussions are going on, would the transformation plan also take a backseat, or would you continue in that same trajectory, assuming the plant is with you, at least if the deal is closed?
So the transformation plan had multiple streams, and it talked of cost saving through procurement, efficiencies, operating stability, and some people-related areas. I think the people-related areas got a lot of headline, but that was only one part of the transformation plan. I would say maybe 20% of the value of the transformation plan was coming from that. 80% was coming from all the other initiatives. So those initiatives are going on, and that is ongoing currently. And to some extent, a lot of the operational stability that is visible, some of the cost takeouts are all part of that transformation plan. So that focus will continue to be there. And like Kaushik said, that's why during a very, very difficult 6 months, we have been cash neutral or cash positive in Europe.
Okay. Thank you so much, and happy Diwali.
Happy Diwali.
Thank you. The next question is from Indrajit Agarwal from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for the opportunity, and congratulations on a good set of numbers. Two questions from my side. One, after all the initiatives that we have taken in Europe over the past couple of years, what could be the steady-state CapEx in the U.K. business, particularly over the next, say, near to medium term?
So, again, obviously, from a purely minimum CapEx point of view, I think in U.K., we are always looking at around 50 million-100 million pounds as what would be sustenance, regulatory compliance kind of thing. Maybe about 50 million is the number. But there are opportunities if you spend more to do some more work, but we will again look at the cash flows and whether that can support it. So the minimum CapEx that is required from a safety, health, sustainability point of view will continue. And again, they've covered that this year. And anything more than that will depend on the affordability of the business.
So when you talk about opportunities, it is on the view of improving profitability, not the overall capacity perspective?
No. It's about profitability. It's about product mix. It's about bringing stability to operations by investing in some of the areas which may need some support, things like that. Not about top-line growth and capacity.
Sure. And my second question, again, is on Europe. So while you have done fantastically well in this quarter, at the spot level, what is the kind of spread versus what we have seen in the second quarter average, depending on the lag that we have on both iron ore, coking coal, steel prices, etc.?
So the second quarter was actually pretty bad. I think it had come down to around 160-170 euros. The third quarter looks over 200, though the spot spreads are much higher, but there is a lag, of course, because we have a fair amount of contracts in half-yearly and quarterly, etc. So we are certainly seeing spreads over 200 this quarter. Long term, what we would like to see is anything over 225, which is for what we look at a long-term self-sustaining average. So that's where it is. Today, it is in excess of 225, though it may not reflect in the numbers that we get simply because there is a lag because of the nature of our contracts. But yes, it's certainly over 200 and not at the levels that we saw for the last few months before that. And that's why, as Kaushik said, September itself was EBITDA positive for us, and let's see how it goes.
Thank you. We'll be able to take two more questions. We take the next question from the line of Alek Murarka from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Good evening, and thanks for the opportunity. On the separation of U.K. and Netherlands, I just wanted to understand what all approvals will be needed. So obviously, you need lenders' approval, but would you also need government approval to go ahead with this?
No, so the most important approval, or is not an approval, but a process, is the consultation with the Works Council, because you're separating the two companies and changing the operating model. The current operating model is a one company operating model, whereas we are going to follow independent paths for these companies. There is no major government approval is required, other than permissions for any particular licenses, et cetera. But I don't think that's material, because the Tata Steel Netherlands and Tata Steel UK on their own have these operating licenses. So it's not so much of a regulatory approval, it's a process approval for consultation with unions and Works Council. And secondly, it is the time for the innovation of contracts or separation of common contracts, et cetera, which are the ones which we have to go through the counterparty and ensure that there are two mirror contracts or separate contracts and so on. So, and the last thing, which will be more about the IT systems and the supply chain arrangements and so on. So those transition stuff is the one which is more, which will take more time. But other than that, regulatory-wise, I don't see very significant approval issues.
And on the balance sheet side, like, so UK and Netherlands entities will be what, debt-free, whenever the separation is done? And the debt will sit in TSE, as a holding company. Is that the right way to understand it?
Yeah. So I think when the before any transaction, but at the separation level, the two entities will, the senior facility agreement will be at the TSE level, as it is now also. It's not on any particular company.
Oh, sure. But no debt will be loaded onto these entities, I mean, UK or Netherlands, when they are separated out.
As we stand today, they are separate legal entities. The debt sits on a common entity, and it gets serviced from the cash flows of both the entities, as and when they have the cash flows, especially in the UK. But if we are following this up with the transaction that we are talking about, then we will use the proceeds to manage the debt, as I said earlier. How much to go there and how much will be here, we will see which is most efficient. But effectively, the consideration will be for the leverage.
Sure. Thanks. And also, just could you touch upon the...
Mr. Murarka, but please, we request you to please limit your questions.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Bhavin Chheda from Enam Holdings. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, sir. Great set of numbers and good plans to deleverage. Just on the plan of continuing this deleveraging, we had a good debt reduction. We are close to 96,000 crore. So without taking into consideration any European proceeds, where are we heading this towards a fiscal end this year and next year? Because we were on path for $1 billion reduction, which we have almost achieved, but the cash flows are very strong. So, and this quarter also had a big benefit of working capital reduction, which will go up when the production increases. So if you can give some roadmap on the consolidated debt movement.
Yeah. So, I would only say, as I've said in the past, that $1 billion is our commitment. Sometimes in a commodity industry, we are not able to do it, like last year. We are not looking at anything other than pushing the debt southwards. And we will, as Naren mentioned, that the similar level of working capital release will not be there, and it's very difficult because the prices are increasing. Even if we hold the number of days, there will be some movement on working capital. But we have a plan to reduce the debt, and we will continue to work on the gross debt numbers. I think it will be more evident as we move towards March as to what kind of debt reduction we will be able to demonstrate. But yes, the business conditions looks robust in India, and we will utilize these cash for further reduction, and in this next 6 months.
Yeah. And my, sir, last question, again, on the Europe debt level, if I heard you correctly, the Tata Steel Europe debt is roughly 1.7 euros billion, right?
Correct.
And
The senior facilities agreement, not including the working capital debt. We are talking about the SFA.
There is over and above the working capital is also there in the European entity.
This is the securitization, which is not classified as debt.
Okay. If I remember the structure correctly, the European entity was funded equity from Singapore via India standalone route, right? If you can have a number of how much. Because why I'm asking this question is that Netherlands divestment proceeds as per estimates would be much more going by the profitable Netherlands, which means that this entire debt would be paid up and you'll retain a big amount of cash at the European level. How do we upstream that cash? Are there any other liabilities?
I think that's what I said. No. As I said that, as far as we haven't finalized that, neither the full number or the structure, but we will be using the proceeds for deleveraging wherever it is, you know. That is the point that I can mention to you.
Okay. Is there any shareholder loan which has to be returned by Europe to some other entity on the standalone side, or there is no such shareholder loan pending?
No. There is investment from Singapore into Tata Steel Europe, but that's not, that's all within. It's nothing outside. I'm just talking about external deleveraging will happen from
Okay.
the situation that comes up.
Great, sir. Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll take that as the last question. I would now like to hand the conference back to the management team for closing comments.
Yeah. Thank you everybody for joining us again. I know it's very late in the day, so I hope you know, got answers to what you're looking for. We are available to take any more detailed questions you want subsequently as well. Thank you and happy Diwali again to all of you. Good night.
Thank you and happy Diwali. Thank you.
Diwali.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Tata Steel Limited, that concludes the conference. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect your lines.